Welcome, learned listeners, to episode 159 of the Nerd Extravaganza podcast, where we follow the syllabus to the letter. I'm Tom.
I'm Brian.
I'm Chris.
I'm Kim.
And this week we'll be discussing education. But first we'll take a stroll around the memory quad and regale you with tales of this week's happenings with our weekly geekly weekly update. Chris, why don't you go first? What you been up to?
Well, actually, my family's been in town, so I haven't been able to indulge my geek as much as I would like. Though we did some things that were, I guess, kind of geeky. One is we went to a lot of local parks, enjoyed them. But we also had a Farscape marathon. And I was thrilled to find out that evidently a lot of sci-fi reruns over the years have skipped a lot of episodes that were completely new to me.
I've
also discovered that probably like a lot of shows, the first season was kind of a little weak, and when it got to the second season is when it got to the magic. When it introduced all the characters I remembered seeing, but that were absent in the first season, and all those personalities in play with all their complicated baggage, it was wonderful.
Did you watch that on Netflix?
Of course.
Netflix has some hidden gems for sure, that being one of them.
But, you know, I guess Farscape would have hit the same niche that Doctor Who's hitting for me now, that kind of really great sci-fi. The science is pretty schmorely when it comes, you know, pretty much like s'mores when it comes to how hard or soft it is. But the stories are just great and the personalities are great. And that's about it for my Geekly Weekly, guys.
Now, that's cool. Farscape is actually one of my mom's favorite shows. She's got like a bazillion DVDs, believe it or not. Yeah. So, good stuff.
You know, my one thing, just real quick, that irked me about Farscape wasn't Farscape itself, it was the Sci-Fi Channel, because they said, just like you have mentioned, they bragged that science fiction wasn't for boys, and proved it with Farscape having a, you know, high level of female audience, and then the next year they canceled the show. But on the flip side, it had a 4-year run. It ended at the top of its game. I much rather would have had that than for it to jump the shark. And with a crazy show like that, it probably could have jumped the shark real quick at some point.
God knows other shows have.
Yeah.
I thought we were using Nuked the Fridge now.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that the new meme for Gone Overboard, Nuked the Fridge? Or is that just for movies?
I don't know.
I've never even heard that term, so.
That's reference to Indiana Jones jumping into the fridge.
Yeah, nuking the fridge. Let's be honest, that movie went, or that series went awry when the credits started for that movie, so. All right, Chris, if that's all you've got, I think I'll throw it over to Cam.
Man, just more Disney. Went up to Disney again for the Star Wars weekends. Had a great time there again. Took advantage of some time, you know, I had fast passes set up for the rides that I didn't get to ride 2 weeks ago when I went. So that was cool. Also, had a chance to meet up with Brian on one of the nights. Magic Kingdom had extended magic hours, and we both were there at the same time, so that was fun. Let's see, just more time in setting up my PlayStation 4, getting it all ready for our Final Fantasy run. So looking forward to that. And, I've just been doing a lot of reading, read another book. I've been really on this Scott Siegler kick. He's got this Galactic Football League series. I finished up the last book in that series. It's not the last book. There's still like more to come, but the last book that's out. And then I started on, his book Pandemic, which is the third in a trilogy, sci-fi trilogy about, you know, invading species from other planets, which is always a good plot for me, a plot that I'll pretty much always be interested in.
That's the guy that you lent me once, right? That was actually the first book in the trilogy.
That was the first book in the trilogy, exactly.
Excellent book. I was honestly a little surprised by that, having not heard of him. Usually I hear of, like, stellar writers. He blew me away.
Really? I didn't even know you read it.
Oh, yeah.
I remember giving it to you, but I didn't even know if you'd read it or not. Yeah, that guy is actually awesome. And the good thing about him, too, is that he's super into social media, and he, like, responds to everyone. So, like, I sent him a message on Facebook. I was like, hey, I just finished, you know, the Champion, which is the book that I read, when's the next one? Like, I need to know what the hell's going to happen. And he's like, oh man, I'm sorry. I'm so busy on these other books. But I'll definitely get to it, you know, and I'll let everyone know when it's coming out, but it won't be for a while. So that's why I ended up going reading Pandemic, because I had that like in my queue to read, but, I hadn't got to it because I got so engrossed. There's actually five of the books in the series that I was reading originally, and I read them back to back to back to back because they were so engrossing. And then now I'm on to his other one. And, let's see, did I do anything else geeky? You know, tabletop gaming, at the Adventure Game Store, like always, Tuesdays and Thursdays for our sponsored nights. And then, Sunday nights has found a new home, at Landlubbers. Vaughn, who does the game night for the Adventure Game Store on Sunday nights, struck a deal with Landlubbers because we're no longer at the previous venue. And, that was actually a really fun time. I went there, Sunday. I basically drove directly from Orlando, back down here. I didn't even go home and stopped there at Landlubbers and played some good played some fun games with some good people there, had some wings, and it was a good night. And, yeah, I think that's pretty much, what I've been doing. It was my mom's birthday. Shout out to my mom. Happy birthday. Took her out Saturday as well. She was also up in Orlando because my brother lives there and we all went out together. We didn't do anything geeky. We just sort of hung out, went to dinner, went to a comedy club, but, that's about it for me.
All right. Sounds like a pretty full week. Any week involving Disney is a pretty full week.
For sure.
My opinion. Brian, I guess that, would make it your turn, sir. Anything to report?
Disney, and more Disney. Speaking of shout outs though, this is just the coolest thing. I was driving home from Orlando, so that's south on the turnpike. And for whatever reason, I just always stop at, Fort Drum. It's just kind of like a nice, not quite halfway point. I don't know, either way I'm going, it's usually that plaza that I stop at. Mm-hmm. And just out of the blue, I ran into two of our favorite guests on Tuesdays and Thursdays, Lenny and Adina.
Ah.
They were just
standing
in line ordering food, and I was like, I shouldn't recognize anyone in this part of the woods. They're actually driving to Ohio for, what is it?
Origins.
And that was pretty neat. He was telling me actually that, they're kind of getting into it more and more. And I was a little embarrassed. I'm sure he didn't mean for it to. They were apparently listening to last week's episode in the car on the way up. Oh. Right before they ran into me.
Oh boy.
So hi guys. I hope you have fun up there.
Yeah, I'd spoke to Keith Dalrymple, the, you know, one of the co-owners there at the Adventure Game Store. And he told me that they had come in and they bought Skulls, which is one of our favorite, you know, Skull and Roses, one of our favorite games. And they were heading up there to Origins and then they were going to see some family. So that's really cool. I'm glad. I hope they have a great time.
Awesome, man. Always good to, I would say always good to run into fans in the wild, but it's never happened to me. So glad it happened to you, Brian.
And we've beat up Disney lately. I did Epcot, Magic Kingdom, and Animal Kingdom. I actually skipped what I will always call MGM Studios, whatever it's called nowadays, because of Star Wars Weekends. I just didn't want to deal with the crowd. I was pretty crowded out. But what I did do was I rode Mission Space like back to back, green and orange, and I just have to say, seriously, if you've never ridden Mission Space, just don't bother with green. It's the exact same, just worse. I don't understand it. And there were like 10-year-old kids on the orange side, so it's not that crazy of a ride. If you have any kind of stomach for rides whatsoever, just go straight orange because it's like 1,000 times better.
So you're saying go to the more intense experience. Don't bother with the less intense. Or are you saying the opposite?
No. I'm saying ride the intense one because If you've ever been on it, it's basically astronaut training and you're taking off from, I guess, you know, Cape Canaveral or whatever to travel to Mars. And the whole gimmick is you feel escape velocity and you feel weightlessness when you're in space. And you don't on the green side. So it misses the point of the entire ride, and I don't understand why it exists.
Even that intense version is a less intense version of the original version. So I think people were like having heart attacks on that shit. when it first came out, and then they dialed it back. I had actually gone on the original, like main intense version. It was intense, but it wasn't like, you know, like you said, if you have any kind of stomach, I mean, I don't think it was that much different than going on like a crazy roller coaster, but,
Tower of Terror is way worse.
Yeah. And then they dialed it back, and then they came out with that less intense version, which is unfortunately what I'm stuck on most of the time because my companion will not ride the intense version.
Yeah, well, so, if you're listening, companion, do it. Because...
do it.
Believe me, I've tried to get her to do it many times, but she will not.
And lastly, visiting Magic Kingdom every single day that I was up there for the sole purpose of Sorcerers of Magic Kingdom cards, I was able to add 3 useful cards to my collection. I'm thrilled about that.
Excellent.
That's pretty sweet.
Another 3-4 years and I'll have the entire set.
Woohoo. Yeah, make sure you get your pack every time you go. You can also buy boosters on Main Street if you are so inclined.
I don't feel too bad because they get enough of my money, and I kind of feel it's cheating. Like, the adventure is, you know, visiting often enough to have the set.
Yeah, I see your point. Yeah, the magic is in collecting them naturally, right?
Right, right. And I'm not really in any big rush, so.
Hmm. Yeah, you'll eventually get them all together. Cool, is that pretty much wrap it up for you?
That does it.
Okay, then over to me. Pretty subdued week. Playing some more Dragon's Dogma. Started playing Demon Gaze or Demon's Gaze for the PSP, and made the mistake of choosing an alternate appearance for the main character when the main character is supposed to have like a glowing demon eye and will always be assumed to be a human male. So I don't really as silly as that sounds, it lets you choose a character appearance and then treats it as though you didn't. So most bizarre, but basically that appears to be a first person dungeon crawler. And looking forward to getting more into that. I haven't played anything on the, if I said PSP, I meant to say Vita in quite a while. Watched Chappie on Xbox. I signed into my Xbox to watch another video program, saw that Chappie was available, and bought it. I don't know, but I think it might just be locked on Xbox, and I can't view it on anything else, so I bought some proprietary version, but I like that movie so much, I couldn't wait to watch it, so definitely bought that on impulse.
Sweet.
Also did a little bit of Disney stuff. I'm catching up on Disney movies I never got around to seeing, so I watched Tangled, which was pretty good. That was the one based on Rapunzel. And yes. That was good stuff. That was actually not too bad. And Princess and the Frog, which was also really good. I think that, in my mind, the Atlantis one, the name of which eludes me, was like the last hand-drawn one they've done. But they've done others. And I think maybe Princess and the Frog might be the most recent hand-drawn Disney feature.
That was the one with the African-American princess, right?
That is correct.
Or am I thinking of something else? Yeah, okay.
Yes, she is. She is, in fact,
I don't know if she's American.
She's American, yeah. Okay. It's based in New Orleans, and she's American. It's a really cool loophole how she becomes a princess. So if you haven't seen the movie, check it out. Definitely really good in it. The animation was really good. Like, I forgot how good Disney were actually at hand-drawn animation, because, you know, almost everything's computer nowadays, and it was really a sight to see. I liked it.
Well, this weekend when I was at it will always be MGM to me, but Hollywood Studios for the Star Wars weekend, I did the Walt Disney sort of, it's not a ride, it's like the little museum thing they have there. Have you been through that, Tom?
Yes, yeah, in Oh, the One Man's Dream Museum or whatever it is.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, people forget that that's how he started. He started as an animator. You know, he just wanted to be an artist. And then everything grew out of him making this, like, you know, just wanting to draw, like, little characters. And if people sleep on that attraction, it's really good. If you really want to know some, like, in-depth Disney history and culture, I definitely recommend that.
Yep.
That is one of my favorite Disney quotes. And I think it was actually Walt who said it. But just remember, this all began with a mouse.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it all began with a mouse that he drew, like, on a train on the way back to California after he'd gotten screwed out of a character that he had created before Mickey Mouse.
Oh, yeah, so when he, like, lost Oswald to whatever studio that was or whatever.
Yeah. It's really – that, like – I love that stuff, you know, being like a corporate attorney. Like, I would love to read that contract that, like, screwed him out of that cartoon. You know what I mean?
Like, well, he was probably just a, you know, a naive creator thinking that people would treat him fairly, and people don't treat you fairly. That's why you need lawyers, right? To make sure that you are treated fairly.
Yeah, and then, you know, half the lawyers don't treat you fairly either, so.
Oh, well, no, that lawyer's not going to treat you fairly in the process.
Yeah, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't.
That's right. No offense to anybody who may be in the legal profession. Anyway, a little Disney viewing, and probably the most exciting thing, I completed my family of robotic cleaning friends by getting a Brava mopping robot that's made by iRobot. And as the name implies, well, the name doesn't imply this at all, but as my description implies, it is a mopping robot. You put a little cloth on the bottom of it, and it can either dry mop or damp mop. You can also use Swiffer attachments and all that sort of thing. And along with my two vacuums, this thing is going to help me keep my floors just spick and span with minimal effort.
And you've got like a horde of robots going on. You're going to take over the world pretty soon with your army of minion robots.
I'm at least going to clean the floors. To quote the promotional video on YouTube, I have added this robot to my fleet of robotic cleaners. It's a little bit less sophisticated. It doesn't dock on its own, and I bought a cheaper model that doesn't have a rapid charger. But so you've got to plug it in, but once it's done charging, you just set it down, and it's got a little, it uses a very interesting tracking system. Unlike the other ones, that sort of just feel their way around, or, you know, find their own way. This uses like a little lighthouse that bounces a signal off the ceiling and maps the room for the thing. So it just kind of knows the dimensions of the room. Yeah.
That's awesome. So it's like almost like bat sonar kind of like.
Kind of. Really cool. Yeah. I mean, truthfully, I think that this is a superior way to do it. Now I'm for all I know, the mop division and the vacuum division are never talk, and they've got different philosophies, but it would seem like you'd be able to put these little gizmos, just have them be kind of attractive and mount them on the ceiling. And then, you know, you've got a nice guidance system for all your little robots. But, yeah, it's pretty cool. So, happy to welcome Moppy to the family, as I have named the creature. Probably not the most imaginative name, but it's cute.
So you've got Moppy, Elmer, and what was it? Vacky?
And Vacky, yep.
Vacky, so, okay. Right, I'm shocked that I remembered those. All right.
No, I'm touched that you do. That's basically like my family, so thanks, Cam. And that's pretty much it for my week. Just welcomed a new child into the home. The stork brought him by. That's it. And that's it for our updates. And with our updates out of the way, we can leave the quad and stop by the campus news. Let's see, who does the campus newspaper? The campus news department? Whatever.
Yeah.
And see what sort of news they have to report. We'll call it the Daily Ganza. So, Daily Ganza reporter Chris, what have you got for us?
Well, I got two bits of news that were cool. One is Lego is taking on Minecraft. They have put out on early Steam access Lego Worlds.
Hmm.
And right now it's only $15. There isn't too much to it, but you can wander around and collect things and fight things and even ride a dragon.
Oh, cool. So wait, when you say take over, do you mean they're doing their version of it or it is Minecraft?
Eventually you'll be able to, you can build things with it as well. you don't really go digging as much, but you can build things and create and morph around your landscape, and the landscape is procedurally generated, just like in Minecraft.
Very cool. Very cool.
And then for those of us who are Star Realm fans of that deck-building card game, hold on to your basically tie your hat and hold on to your shoes. Those guys are coming out now with the Epic card game, which promises to basically give you the thrill of being able to do a trading card game without the price of a trading card game. You can get one pack for four players, but if you get three packs, each one is worth $15, you'll have enough to do fully constructed decks. Basically, their setup's a little different. When you have your hand in front of you at the start of the turn, you get one gold piece, and your cards are either free to put out or they cost one gold. So basically that one gold piece kind of forces you to prioritize, I guess, more of the heavy hitters. So right off the bat, you're not trying to build up anything. You're just immediately playing the game.
Yeah, sounds cool.
That's actually it.
And they came out, I think they're coming out with another Gambit for the regular Star Realm set. They're coming out with another Gambit expansion, I think, and another actual, it's like an 80 card. I don't know if this is the Epic, if it's the Epic card game or if it's something else. I think they're coming out with some 80, it's like an 80 card standalone expansion, they're calling it, but that you can combine with the original deck and make it a four player game.
Oh.
Did you see that?
No, I haven't seen that yet. I haven't.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, the Epic card thing, by the way, that's 120 cards in the one deck. They're kickstarting it right now. First day, they've already busted their goal of 50,000. They're up to 131,000. In fact, in the last hour, it's jumped $1,000.
Wow. Yeah, that's going to be a runaway success, I'm sure.
With 27 days to go.
Yeah, they're going to make a ton.
All right, Chris, if that is it for you, and
that's pretty much it.
Hopefully you are in a position to profit handsomely from this.
Well, actually, my girlfriend, who sometimes runs hot and cold on games, this may be the first Kickstarter she participates in.
Because
she's a real big Star Realms fan.
Nice.
Okay, cool. So you figured out a way to cop like multiple copies of rare bits that you can sell for a premium? That's what I'm driving at.
Yes, yes.
Okay, good.
Actually, that's one of their sell pitches on the Kickstarter. Is they're like, hey, if you did the Star Realms Kickstarter, look at what that stuff is worth on eBay. Now we have a new Kickstarter. I am not kidding. That is one of their little pitches on their video.
It's an investment. Nice. All right. If that concludes your news, I'll toss it over to campus reporter Cam.
Well, speaking of Kickstarter, the son of Leonard Nimoy is trying to kickstart a documentary film on his late father, Leonard Nimoy. Adam Nimoy is the son's name, I believe. And that is on Kickstarter right now, 27 days to go. They're only at about $58,000 for a $600,000 goal. So I don't know whether or not they will make it or not, but it's getting a lot of buzz in the press, so that might drive up the pledges. It's called For the Love of Spock, but I feel like they're really missing like a chance to call it like the Spockumentary or something. I feel like that would be a much better name. And for the love of like whatever, I think that was DeForest Kelly, Bones, didn't he? For the love of God, Jim, I'm a doctor, not a whatever. That's what he said, right? I don't know why they would use For the Love of for Spock, but I don't know. If you feel like supporting the Nimoys, go ahead over to Kickstarter and support that. Tom, one of your favorite little pieces of technology, the Amiibo.
Ah, yeah.
They have come out with a bunch of new releases recently, I'm sure you know. Apparently in the UK, our British fellow geeks were cheated out of getting their Splatoon Amiibos because the entire truck holding all of them was stolen by some gangsters. So if you want a Splatoon Amiibo in the UK, you're going to have to go onto the black market on the seedy streets and try to find one from, you know, I just picture like one of those guys with like a trench coat that like opens it up and he's got like, you know, like a million Amiibos inside his jacket. Like, hey, I got what you want, you know?
This sucks because, you know, silkroad.com is shut down and that would have been my go-to place to grab these.
Hey, Tom. Hey, Tom. Come here. Come here. You need a Splatoon? Here you go. Here you go.
Got your amiibo right here, kid.
That's right. First one's free. Yeah.
I feel for our UK listeners who are amiibo fans. We've talked about Gamefly before. And, you know, we talk a lot about the streaming game trend and how it's just only growing and probably going to take over the console systems. Apparently Gamefly is throwing their hat into the ring on that, and they are going to be starting their own Netflix, style streaming service for video games. It's not as fun as it sounds. You have to make sort of an investment, if you want to take advantage of the streaming games. You have to buy an Amazon Fire TV system. So that kind of sucks. I mean, I think the Amazon Fire is like $99. And it only hosts Android apps. So you won't be able, I don't think you, if you're an Apple user, I don't think you'd be able to use the service. But if you are an Android user and you have Amazon Fire, you can get the Gamefly game streaming system for about, or subscription for about $10 a month. Just like Netflix. So that's kind of cool, I guess. Big Trouble in Little China. Do you guys remember that movie? We talked about Last Starfighter last week.
So
Big Trouble in Little China is going to be rebooted. Hmm. And can you guys guess who the star is going to be?
No, I cannot guess. I have absolutely no idea.
Oh, our good friend Dwayne The Rock Johnson. is going to be the star. He's going to be playing Jack Burton.
Oh, boy.
I do not mean to offend The Rock, but...
Yeah.
But the idea of they're just making a remake, kind of like...
That's what's bugging me. Like, Dwayne The Rock Johnson is right for pretty much everything else, but I just don't think anyone's right for this. Like, I don't know if this... This is, like, almost sacred to me.
Yeah. I mean, that was one of my favorite movies growing up. And, you know, it's funny because I've actually met Dwayne The Rock Johnson. He by no means is he a friend, or would he even remember meeting me? But he's like a friend of a friend, and he's actually a super nice guy. So
from the
interaction that I've had, so I certainly wish him well. But I don't know how this is going to turn out.
Well, we'll have him on the show and see, and we'll kind of gauge the level of respect he has for the role.
I'm sure that is in the offing.
Sure, absolutely.
Let's see. Mega Man, Tom, one of your favorite franchises and one of mine, is getting a 26-episode cartoon series.
Oh.
So that would be pretty cool, I think.
Hopefully it's based on the Captain and the Game Master version of Mega Man.
I don't know what it's going to be capped on, but what it's going to be based on. But let's see. It's going to be... It's happening. It's definitely happening. So
yes, that should be good.
Yeah, I'm hoping. Speaking of Apple, there's a recycling company in San Francisco that got a ton of boxes as a donation from some old lady. She was like a 70-year-old lady. She came and she dropped off a bunch of boxes. Inside one of the boxes was an Apple One.
Oh, wow. So which is worth like a fortune, right?
It is worth, someone immediately purchased it from them for $200,000.
Wow. Wow.
For those that don't know what the Apple One is, it's the like original Apple computer. It's like, it's made out of wood.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And, it is like the centerpiece for any electronics collector. I mean, it's like the holy grail of computer, collectible computer components. And, someone bought it for $200,000, and it's actually not a too bad of a story. If this woman finds out that like she had done that, she can actually go back to that company and get $100,000 check from them, because their policy is if someone donates something and it's a big ticket item like that, they will split, the, you know, whatever the proceeds are in half with them.
Oh, all right. That's cool.
So she's got $100,000 check waiting for her. If someone gets to her and says, "Hey, dummy, you got rid of this."
Hopefully she read the article instead of just the headline and didn't drop dead when she realized she threw away $200,000.
Yeah, exactly. And they're actively like looking for her. I mean, even in the article that I read, they're saying like, look, this woman was in her 60s or 70s. She was driving a, you know, late model SUV, and she turned up, you know, she dropped it off in April and her husband had died a couple months earlier, and she cleaned out her garage, and there went her Apple. It's probably her husband's, like, pride and joy, and she got rid of it. That sucks.
Yeah, he's probably, don't you ever get rid of this. This is priceless. Oh, whatever you say, Harry, and then next thing you know, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, poor Harry. So now on to my last bit of news and my favorite story of the day of probably the year so far. It is official. Fallout 4 is going to be released by Bethesda Games.
Woo!
I am a huge fan of the Fallout trailer. I can't tell you how many hours I spent playing Fallout, especially Fallout 3 New Vegas. It is just, it's funny too, because there were all these stories that were out there was buzz that Fallout 4 was coming out. Then there were these stories that came out that, oh, it's bullshit. It's fake. It's not really coming out. And then just randomly Bethesda put on their website, like a please stand by Fallout themed sort of like, you know, one of those old school, you watch TV. It's like, just like, I guess like a placeholder sort of thing. And it had a countdown, a 24-hour countdown. And so everyone was like, hoping and praying that it was the countdown to the announcement that Fallout 4 would be coming out. And indeed it was. They came out, they released the trailer at the end of the countdown, and it looks fucking sick. So I can't wait for it.
Well, isn't that the big news that, that your vault dweller may actually have a voice?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's actually, I mean, if you watch the trailer, he speaks in the trailer at the end of the trailer. So it's, you know, in Fallout, there are companions and stuff like that. And the dog, most of the trailer is actually the dog companion, which is actually kind of cute. And then they meet up at the end of the trailer and he's like, come on, boy, let's go. And so it's actually pretty cool.
Awesome. I wish I could cop to any experience with the series. I hear it's amazing, but I've played zero of those games.
It is super amazing, and it's, I mean, it's, but, you know, it will take years off your life. I mean, I played this game solid for a good year, like, you know, just, or the previous one. So we got to get Final Fantasy going quick, or I might get distracted.
No, let's make that our goal, like, this coming week. That definitely has to happen, so.
For sure.
Awesome. So any more news, sir? That's a pretty huge basket of news.
Yeah, no, that's all I got.
All right. Brian, why don't you wrap up this week's edition of the School Paper with your findings?
I have some pretty interesting news. The first being that as much negativity as America generates about cosplay, and cosplay is not consent, and cosplay is too sexy, and all that kind of stuff. Apparently the Chinese do it better. They have apparently cracked down on any cleavage in cosplay at conventions.
They're like the biggest perverts around. Like, what the hell's wrong with them?
Really? So the Chinese are not, they don't want any sexy elements in their cosplay?
They have rigid community standards to uphold.
Oh, okay. Well, that will probably make things better for cosplayers the world over, because China constitutes a pretty massive slice of the world population, do they not?
Fairly large, from what I heard.
Yeah, at least like 2%, so that's pretty big. what are your thoughts on that, Brian?
I really do think some cosplay goes a little too sexy. I mean, I think I've said this before, it is still public. And if you watch anime, some of those characters are really, I mean, they're not public ready. But I think this is a little too far. Like, any cleavage is a little strict. But then again, they do kill every, like, second daughter born, so.
Ouch.
Not known for their leniency.
True, true. Extreme measures. Okay.
This is actually really fascinating to me. Has anybody ever heard of a Batcherizer?
No, I don't think so.
There's this little circuit sleeve that you can put on your AA and C batteries, and apparently you can get about 8 times the life out of those batteries.
Oh, right. I think I may have heard that. Is that like real?
It isn't a consumer model yet. They have a prototype, and they've shown it around. Apparently PC World did a big piece on them, so that's pretty weighty. That's, you know, probably not fly by night. And it is scheduled to come out later this year, so they're really moving forward.
Awesome. So now my disposable batteries are going to last like forever. It's almost like I won't even need rechargeables.
The company is pretty honest about the market moving towards rechargeables, so I don't know that they're hoping to replace them, but they are saying that batteries were, I think they said, a $14 billion industry last year. So, you know, even a part of that as things change is definitely worth their investment.
Mm.
And
yeah.
Just think of, you know, we're all green here. So the clutter you'll save and the hazards you won't create.
Yeah, I like it.
1/8 the batteries on the planet. Pretty big thing.
Yeah, that's kind of huge.
I don't think people really understand the need we have for improving our battery technology. I mean, everything we fantasize about and want to do in science fiction, half of it could actually be accomplished. Of course, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but a lot of it could be accomplished if we had the power to pull those things off.
Yeah.
It's the power requirements. It's not the science that can't be done. It's not the software that can't be done. It's the sheer power to pull that off.
Agreed. I, for one, am happy to hear of any advance in battery technology, as does Chris, clearly. Any more news, sir?
Last little bit of news. This one's short and sweet, but cover your ears if you don't want to hear spoilers that are already all over the internet. The latest canonical issue of Star Wars, the comic book, is out. And the big reveal, the mysterious character that's been stalking Han Solo the entire series. Any guesses?
I know the answer, so
God, I don't know, but I do know. Go ahead and tell me.
It's his wife.
What?
How Firefly-esque.
What?
It is his wife.
I seriously thought you were going to say Boba Fett somehow. Like,
I thought it was Lando.
Even worse than Boba Fett, a bounty hunter. It's the missus.
What? Wait, I don't know if I like this. What?
Yeah, and the picture of her, it's pretty funny. Like, she looks like Medusa.
Yeah, I was wondering whether she was an alien with, like, things in her hair, or whether those are just really thick dreads that are flying in a breeze. I was confused with the picture.
Yeah. And, like, doesn't, correct me if I'm wrong, but doesn't the comic book take place between New Hope and Empire Strikes Back?
Yes.
Boy.
Yeah, so all this is happening while he's, like, getting with Leia? Like,
just flirting. I don't think they did anything romantical on the screen.
It just makes, like, that whole, like, relationship different now, I feel like.
It is the first new developments to radically alter the movies, because that does change their relationship pretty significantly. But of course, we also don't have any idea if she's really married, if he jilted her at the altar, if it was all some scam that he pulled involving like a romance con, or if she's just batshit insane. It could be anything, but it looks to be pretty big. And to make it even worse for Han, because I know I hate when this happens, Leia was there with him when he found out. So
awkward.
Awesome. So now they're making it like a freaking soap opera, right? Like, that's hilarious.
Wow. Okay. That's an interesting bit of news. And I really wish I had kept up on those comics. I was collecting them pretty diligently for a while, but I'm currently way behind at this point. Oh well, thanks for that breaking news here on the Nerd Extravaganza podcast. And is that it for you?
My only other comment is to rush out and buy that comic immediately if you're going to collect it, because it'll surely be $30 by the end of the week.
Oh God, I'm sick of it. I bit my tongue about the amiibos, and I can't bite my tongue about this. I'm so sick of the speculative collector's market. Like, I just want to go buy something when I want to buy it, just in a store. I don't want to have to rush out because a bunch of mouth breathing losers are going to go try to run the price up on it.
It's a first appearance.
Given the topic of tonight's show, I would be remiss if I didn't point out the supply and demand economics lesson here, I guess. Unfortunately.
I know, but like, supply and demand makes sense, but this shit has no intrinsic value. This is pure, right. Like, it's supply and demand based solely on an economy and a society wherein people can afford to value garbage like this. Ugh. And I love entertainment, don't get me wrong, and I like collecting, but... All right. Okay. Is that it?
That's it. I got you worked up enough.
All right. Well, no, I'm about to get worked up one more time. And this is a perfect segue into tonight's topic, which is education. We all know one of the big... Let's see if you guys can name it. Everybody's pushing for today's students to go into a sort of family of disciplines, the acronym for which forms a part of a plant. You may have heard of it. Not the branch, but the, you know, the main part of the plant. Starts with an S, T, E, M, STEM education. Okay, cool. All right, I'll just go ahead and spell it out. Science, technology, engineering, and math, I think that stands for. Whatever. They want everybody to go to school for these technical disciplines. And this is a really good motivation for tonight's topic. But even as we're telling our students to go into these fields, because they're the in-demand, you know, fields of tomorrow. And they, by the way, they've been saying this stuff since like the 90s. Like, this has been the mantra. But even as we're pushing students, you know, toward this as the pathway to success, I read that none other than Disney, the company that we all love and whose praises we were just singing, has just laid off a bunch of workers and replaced them with cheap H-1B import workers. For those people who don't know, and if you're in the tech industry, you probably would. The H-1B visa is a visa designed to allow American companies to bring in highly specialized workers to, you know, for research positions or, you know, basically to fill positions that we just don't have the local talent for. However, routinely what they're used for is this little switch game that Disney did, where they'll bring in the H-1B guys. They're working at a fraction of the cost of the American worker. And they kind of have to, because Disney's holding their visa. They can't go get another job somewhere else. If Disney pulls their visa, they have to leave the country. So you basically got the equivalent of an indentured servant coming over here, taking a job from an American. And to add to the indignity, Disney asked that the Americans, as part of their severance package, and this is another common practice, train these people on how to do their jobs that they are taking.
Oh, jeez.
Now, I'm not hating on the H-1B guys, you know, the immigrants. I've met a lot of folks who've come in from abroad who were sharp people. Nothing against them. What I'm hating on is this practice, even as we're trying to tell our population, hey, this is the key to success. This is the key to success until a company figures out a way to not have to hire you so they can bring in a cheaper worker from abroad. So, education, H-1Bs, we were going to talk about education overall tonight. We kind of got on a soapbox pre-episode. Let's hit it, guys. Let's talk about education, whether we should be pushing everybody towards STEM or college, or, you know, whether there really is a roadmap to success, whether maybe more hands-on focused education makes sense for certain people. Let's just chew the fat about this, because it's a topic that is really always on my mind. It has been ever since I finished school.
Well, class, I would like to kind of rewind and do a kind of education 101 that might help set the foundation for this episode. Because about in the 1970s, the baby boomers, that was when a big change happened in the American education system. Maybe even a little sooner with like World War II. But really, around that time, the GI Bill was offered to people and they took it. And before that, people kind of were, even within your racial setups, there wasn't as much movement as people like to think there was. You know, if you were a blue collar guy, you were going to be a blue, you know, if you're in a blue collar family, you're going to say blue collar. Only kind of like, you know, the people who had the money and people who could be really smart kind of moved up and down the ladder. After the GI Bill came out, that massively changed. especially after Vietnam and the baby boom, with the baby boomers. They were the most educated generation ever in human history. And between that and America already having a great economic engine going because we were the last to step into World War II and keep our economy, you know, America took off. But now we're getting to the other end of it when their kids who have had some other things going on with the baby boomers, oh, you're special, you're pretty, we're not going to educate you the way we were educated because the baby boomers can never do anything that the great generation did before.
Right.
Do it different. They got to put their stamp on it.
Yes. Oh, God, yes. Wow, you're speaking my language, Chris. Yes.
And so we had a whole different education system with new math. Everybody was special. Everybody's going to get, you know, a medal for participating. And now all these special snowflakes, which that's one of the best quotes I've seen in the movie Incredibles. Everybody's special. Well, that means nobody is. Now they're coming up. Because, you know, it went to, like, you know, go to the where the smart jobs are and save. That's kind of what our original generations were up to. You know, save, especially after the Depression. Go to where the jobs are. Of course, back then, especially, and to be honest, you know, if you were white and you were male, you pretty much couldn't not get a job. I had a sociology professor tell me, oh, yeah, when we graduated, it wasn't a question of getting a job. It was a question of how good a job you can get to impress everybody. Things have changed now, right?
For sure.
Without a doubt.
And now with these, you know, and so it went from that to, well, maybe you can kind of get it. If you can find a job that relies with your talents, that's great. So maybe instead of just getting the job, you can get a job that matches your talents and you can do better. And then that has morphed, especially with this generation, into follow your dreams.
Right.
And unfortunately, the economy has not been able, especially in a first world, even in a first world country, to support that concept. And these poor kids, I feel for them to some degree, they've been kind of taken for a ride. You know, they're looking up at their parents and their parents are like, I spent a summer paying off my college tuition. Not mentioning they had the GI Bill help with that. Why can't you do that? And the guy's looking at like $500,000 in student debt. So I think that's a lesson we can help to put context to where we're going from here as we have a glut of educated people and not the places to put them. One of the last things Andy Rooney said on 60 Minutes was, well, maybe we should have ditch diggers who can quote Shakespeare. And I'm kind of like, really? he retired the next year, you know.
Sure, yeah.
So I rambled. I apologize for the ramble, but if somebody wants to take the baton and go with that, if anybody disagrees with what I just gave as your education for the 21st century 101, please take the gavel, baton, diploma, whatever.
No, Chris, I 1,000% agree with you. I mean, if anyone's ever read the book, The Bell Curve, mm-hmm. by Charles Murray and I think his name's Richard Herrnstein. Not everyone can be millionaires. You know, you need ditch diggers and you need CEOs and you need everything in between. And so, you know, I think it was probably the generation after ours. Well, I'm a little, we sort of got this a little bit too, but definitely like my younger brother's generation and certainly the generation after that, which I believe is called the millennials, they got this whole shtick of you can do anything you want to do. It doesn't matter what you do. Just make sure it makes you happy, you know? And that is just a fallacy in my opinion. I mean, you can't, if everyone did what made them happy, I mean, it would be the world would be a very different place. I mean, I sure as hell wouldn't be where I'm at right now. I'd be, you know, somewhere else doing some really freaky stuff, but like, you know, it's this whole idea, like you said, you know, everyone's this like individual snowflake and yeah, maybe we all are individuals, but you know what? At the end of the day, we've all got to survive in a society. And it's this whole idea of just follow your dreams and do whatever you want. Yeah. It sounds great in theory, but on paper, it doesn't work. And you know, I don't want to like sound like an ogre crushing the dreams of, you know, young kids, but you know, you have to introduce some sort of practicality into that as well. And to your point, Tom, I mean, it makes it even tougher to do that when, like you say, you know, the traditional STEM subjects, which used to be, you know, automatic money makers. I mean, if you went into engineering, if you went into science, you know, all that stuff, you know, you were guaranteed a paycheck. That's not even necessarily so now either. So it's more of a Darwinian, you know, conundrum for these kids. It's like either adapt and survive or get stuck on your parents' couch, which, you know, 50% of people under 30 are doing anyway.
God.
And so it's tough out there. It's tough.
Brian, what are your thoughts?
I don't think I'm quite as doom and gloom as all that. I kind of do agree that you can do anything you want, but no one ever said you'd have everything you want if you do.
True.
Very true. Very true.
I mean, you can be a bum. You can, you know, be a amateur professional video gamer and maybe win a, you know, $15 first prize at your local GameStop or something. But you can't have the nice clothes, the endless MP3s, the, you know, Netflix, Hulu, every subscription every single month. I mean, you guys, you know what I've done with phones lately. I mean, a new cell phone's like $600. You don't get a new cell phone every time one comes out if you're not willing to, you know, knuckle down and do it. But if you want to be happy, if you want to, you know, just be an artist and, I don't know, dance on the corner for shillings, well, go ahead.
That's a good point. Yeah, you're just not necessarily going to be able to eat that night.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think anybody really thinks about it when they think of, well, once upon a time, we had these amazing artists who, you know, Leonardo devoted his life to art and look what he did. And yeah, but 1,000 Emmanuels starved on the streets trying to make it as a Raphael or as a Leonardo or...
Well, funny
as
you mentioned that, because somewhere floating on the internet is one of Leonardo da Vinci's resumes that he sent to a sponsor. I mean, we could probably do a whole other episode on the economics of doing art because it's, you know, some people think you have two different versions of it, state-sponsored and private-sponsored. But one of his resumes mentioned nothing about his art. Nothing. All it had in it was... how many war machines he invented and how cheap he could make them.
Well, he was trying to sell out, clearly.
Yeah. Well, you tailor your resume to the audience, right?
Exactly. But you know,
don't tell Boeing about the churches you've painted.
Right. Exactly. And then when Boeing, you know, that's what you do, right? That famous monologue in Dogma between Matt Damon and Ben Affleck. You know, you do one for yourself and then you go back to the well. You come back. You do one war machine, and then you make another, you know, priceless painting.
You guys are hitting on a couple of kind of important things here. Everybody has something they'd like to do, and in a lot of cases, that's nothing. Or nothing productive, right? You know, that would be great. I think what galls me is that it seems like a certain social contract has been violated or thrown out the window or maybe never existed. Or maybe cease to exist as soon as forces prevailed that allowed it to no longer exist, those forces being like the global economy and that sort of thing. There's no guarantee of a living, no matter how much of an education you get, no matter into what discipline you direct your attention. Because, and this is the thing, this is the part that I find particularly disgusting. It seems like no matter in what field you try to hang your hat, the people who are hiring you are always going to try to erode your value. And there's to again harp on STEM a little bit, and this is not even to talk about artists who have always had a tough go of it. You can read papers that basically show you the depressing effect that visa programs and pitting a, you know, workers around the globe against each other has had on engineering disciplines and so on. And this isn't to say that engineering and computer science isn't still lucrative, but it's kind of gross to feel a certain sense of pressure, of constant pressure eroding away of the eating away at the money-making potential in those fields. And that's doing, quote-unquote, the right thing by our society. That's going into STEM. You're not some mush-brained poet. You're not going to school to be an artist. You're not a sculptor. No, you're getting a real job. You're slinging code. You're doing the right thing. And they're still trying to screw you. Like, at a certain point, are we all starving artists? When does that lunacy end? And how can we tell kids to study when college or vocational school or otherwise, when at the end of the day, it only maybe marginally increases your chances of success?
Speaking of medieval times, I think we have a lot more in common with that than we'd like to believe.
Serfdom?
Serfdom, yes.
It certainly seems like, and don't get me wrong, I'm not like a radical Marxist or anything, but it certainly does seem like power and control of the economic fortunes of the world is being concentrated in fewer and fewer hands. That's as far as I'll go. I'm not advocating for any radical action to remedy that at this time.
99%, man.
Yeah, I mean...
Well, you know, where my family originally comes from, the whole idea of you slinging code, that's not real work. You're not doing real work until you get your hands in it, and you're breaking something, and you're making something, and you're welding something.
There's a lot to be said for that, though, because our roads are falling apart, and we don't make anything in this country anymore, and someone has to do it.
Someone has to do it, but someone also has to pay somebody to do it.
Well,
what's the difference, you know, and what's the definition of a fair wage to get that done compared to like a CEO and whatnot and to raise a family, right?
Apparently a fair wage for slinging burgers is $15 an hour now.
Well, at least in certain quarters that is thought to be the case. I'll answer this way. Whatever that fair wage is determined to be, I wouldn't be surprised to find that, you know what, the Congress passes a, you know, Infrastructure Revitalization Act, you know, by the year 20, whatever, we're going to completely redo all these vital pieces of national infrastructure. I wouldn't be shocked if somehow some corporation from China with a legion of lower paid workers gets a special pass to come in and do the work to save, quote unquote, to save the American people money.
Well, that would be exactly it. Well, we'll never, our workforce has to be trained and has to be this and has to be that, and we'll never make our deadlines. We have to outsource.
Right, right. Like, that's the thing that bothers me. Now, the $15 an hour for a burger flipper is another whole different kettle of fish. We could talk about minimum wage too, but, that's where my head is now. I just feel like, anything that would benefit the average working stiff is seen as an evil these days, or seen as something to be restricted. And that's kind of gross.
I was raised largely by my grandparents, so I kind of missed out on a generation of experience. So I'm really behind the times. But once upon a time, not so terribly long ago, if you got out of school, if you got out of high school and you got a job and you did that job well, you would retire in 50 years with a golden watch and a pension and a home and a family and 2-car garage. And I mean, that company would take care of you.
Sure.
And in the last, honestly, 60 years, that's gone to hell.
Well, of course it has, Brian. If I'm a shareholder and I'm making a certain return and I could be making more of a return if we would just quit paying these lazy retirees, you know, who haven't worked.
Or our employees.
Right. I mean, the mindset has shifted to, look, we're the ownership of the company. This all the money is ours. The workforce is a necessary evil that we need to do our best to mitigate against.
I mean, the guys that were back in the 50s and 70s didn't make a profit being shareholders when they ran the company the other way.
Well, they didn't make these profits.
They didn't make these profits is the argument. And, you know, the companies exist as a machine to maximize profits. The workforce is sort of a, you know, again, the costs of operation are a necessary evil. Ideally, it would cost nothing to create our products. And Cam, I'm not in any way asking for legal opinion here or anything, but if the way I understand it, the way a lot of corporations are set up, the officers have a duty to maximize profit in any way possible.
Yeah, and I'll play my my actual role of the evil corporate lawyer. Yeah, the officers and directors of any corporate entity have a duty to the shareholders to maximize profits. That doesn't necessarily mean that they have to be evil and you know, throw people out. You know, there's also, you know, a notion of corporate responsibility and a notion of corporate citizenship to, you know, bolster goodwill in society and, you know, preserve resources and not be, you know, to be a good corporate citizen and not pollute the environment. So there are these other things that are involved. I'm not saying that, you know, corporations ever take that very seriously, but certainly they, you know, it's there. So it wouldn't be like, you know, against the rules or, you know, wouldn't be a breach of their fiduciary duties to, you know, throw in some legalese, to, you know, do something good for their employees or the environment or society as a whole. However, you hit the nail on the head just with your natural verbiage, Tom. Labor costs. Labor is a cost just like electricity and just like, you know, a stapler or paper or whatever it is. And so any good manager, executive, CEO, it tries to minimize all costs, and that includes labor. So, you know, those days, Brian, of, you know, someone staying with the company for 50 years are long gone. I think the average time someone stays with a company nowadays is about 5 years, 5 to 7 years. Mm. But, you know, I think people look at that as a negative statistic. I see it as a way of sort of being a positive statistic. If you are a go-getter, you're smart, you are actively taking an interest in your personal growth or your professional growth and your career, that is a way, you know, moving companies is a way to maximize your profits, you know, your personal profits as opposed to the corporate profits. If you go into a company and you know your shelf life is probably only going to be 4, 5, 7 years, before they bring someone in that's younger, that will do the job for half the price, well then you need to make sure that whatever you do, whether it's for that company or for another company that you're going to go work for later, you know, you're on your game and you are the best at what you do, so that when you go and you look for another job or your job comes up for review in that company, you can go to your manager and say, well, okay, yeah, you know what? You can bring in someone that can do the basic duties of my job for half the price, but let me tell you what I bring to the table in terms of maximizing your, you know, the productivity, that you need for your corporate, you know, quarterly profits or whatever it is, and show them what you can do. And 9 times out of 10, that will win out over young inexperience.
Oh, I wish I could agree with that particular statement.
Well, you know, I'm in, you know, one of my side businesses is a staffing company, and I see that all the time. We do see a lot, Tom, of what you brought up with the H-1B, because I am in the engineering sector and medical devices and stuff like that. So H-1B workers are very much a big component of that, but they are typically tapped for more of the quote unquote unskilled jobs, where, because they're just learning, you know, they don't have a lot of experience. So they'll bring them in as sort of a, you know, in the lower level positions, but in the higher level positions, there is a ton of movement and a ton, especially now that the economy is much more robust than it was several years ago. Someone with a good resume, 10 to 15 years of experience is much sought after. I mean, I, you know, if someone walked in my door with 10 to 15 years of experience in the medical device sector, I could get that guy a job in a heartbeat. I could get him multiple jobs in a heartbeat. It would be almost a bidding war to get that guy's talent, especially if he has certain certifications. He's got certain, you know, specializations in different areas. I won't bore the audience with, you know, what those are, but, you know, needless to say, if that person has, you know, a certain skill set, that guy will get a job at a huge wage, and, I would be taking a great commission off that. So, you know, to Brian's point, it's not as dire as it seems. If you, you know, if you have the skill set and you take the time to invest in yourself, there are still a lot of opportunities out there. But if you're just going to sit back and be like, well, whatever, you know, companies owe me something and they need to take care of me and I need to, you know, I should just have to go in and, you know, all I owe them is a 9-to-5, you know, punch a clock work day, then, you know, you're going to be sorely mistaken and you're going to be one of those people out in the cold.
I think that's exactly what some people are having problems with. And maybe the younger kids grow up with this. You're not your 9-to-5 anymore. You have to be your own educator, your own promoter, your own marketer, your own negotiator.
Right.
So you're saying the advice to go to school or to get training isn't necessarily bad advice, but yeah, basically to Brian's point, you are your own, God, I almost hate to say this, because you're not a contractor in that you are a W-2 employee, usually of a company you get picked up by. But you, essentially, yeah, you're your own training department, you're your own personal, like, marketing department, you're your own personal everything. You're like your own little corporation, except without all the tax benefits.
It's like anything else in life. You're going to get out of it what you put into it. If you just wake up every morning and drag yourself to work and punch a clock and don't do anything extra, well, then you know what? Don't be surprised when you're one of the people that's on the chopping block when it comes time to make cuts. But if you're someone that is your own advocate, that is your own, like you said, contractor, you're investing in yourself. You are your own business, within the business structure that you're working in. Well, then you know what? Hey, that doesn't mean you're guaranteed a spot anywhere. But that does really put you ahead of the pack when, you know, it does come time for those cuts. You can either stay at that place because you can demonstrate why you should stay, or it gives you a huge leg up on other candidates when you're going to look for another job somewhere else. And I'm not saying that is even the best route to take. I will never work, if I can help it, I will never work for someone else again. I did that for 7-8 years, you know, several years ago, I started my own business and, you know, I vowed to myself that I would never be under someone else's thumb again. And so I would rather invest in myself and live and die by my own, you know, merits or, you know, whatever, you know, whatever I do and eat what I kill. But, you know, that's me. Some people don't like to do that. Well, and that's fine. If you want that, I guess, quote unquote, security of a paycheck every week, well, then, you know, it's not just getting up and going to work. It's making sure that you are ahead of the pack.
I think part of my, I wouldn't say issue, but one of my observations has been that one of the things that have died off as well is at one point management, especially middle management, was supposed to be, in addition to managing, they were supposed to help guide people, mentor them, get them up to speed to becoming someone who can, you know, know what you need to. Because just because you know you should promote yourself doesn't mean you know how to, that sort of thing. And I think some of that has been lost. There's no longer management who is an advocate for trying to grow people. I think that's part of what's been missing and part of the reason why there's a lack of loyalty on both sides now.
Well, no, absolutely. But I think, you know, again, your own verbiage tells the story. I mean, what used to be, I mean, you know, Coke used to be 50, you know, 5 cents a can, but it isn't anymore. You know, the reality is that times have changed and it's, you know, it's Darwinism just like anything else. If you don't keep up, if you don't make sure that you're, at the top of your game, you're going to get left behind. And that's, unfortunately, it's a cruel and harsh reality of life, but it is what it is. I mean, it's still better than, you know, living like a caveman and you know, hunting with sticks and bows, you know, but it, you know, we still have it pretty damn good. It just means that you've got to, God forbid, put in some work and time, you know.
Cam, let me ask you this. For the average, never mind, I won't even qualify it. Have things changed for the better since the time, you know, we're hearkening back to? Have things changed for the better on balance for most people?
I think if you ask the average Joe, you know, Joe Public, they would say, like you said, average. I mean, again, average not being a negative qualifier. I think if you just ask a person on the street, they would probably say, no, it's a lot harsher now than it was before. But I think from a global perspective, it is better because we need to compete. You know, there are no more superpowers. The superpowers nowadays are countries with the strongest economic sectors. And that is China. That is increasingly Germany. That is, you know, it's these companies that I say companies, but basically these countries are like big companies that are competing with us in the States on a global level. And if we are, and I'll use the car industry as a perfect example, the car industry was a hugely blighted, overstuffed, just, you know, monster of of inefficiency. And it took them some very hard years and some very lean years of learning very tough lessons until they became profitable again. And now they are profitable. Unfortunately, you know, they got the help of the United States government, but I believe, you know, unlike the banks, which I kill all the time, which I think are terrible, they paid a lot of what they got back, and then some. So I'm not too down on the American car industry. But it took a lot of factory workers, a lot of families, a lot of, you know, really good people having to learn hard lessons and retrain themselves, into other sectors, for the car industry to become profitable again. And now we're seeing that they are making inroads actually into Japan and other countries, Europe, you know, other countries that were absolutely killing us before, in terms of car sales. So that is the example I use when you ask me if someone's going to ask me, is this a good thing? Yes, it's a good thing for the U.S. economy. Is it a good thing for the person on the street? No. Because, you know, they have to do something different. You know what I mean? Well, they have to actually work hard. You know, they can't just, you know, wake up and, you know, do what they did every single day of their life.
Unless, and I agree with you that the car companies are kind of, we're kind of victims of circumstance, but, unless you're a banker in the business of, you know, right, just packaging in a couple of valuable pieces of paper with just a bundle of garbage you picked up from a parking lot and selling it as a single investment.
Yeah. I mean, that was just a fucking dick job. I mean, the banks were horrible to us as a society and the country as a whole. And they got bailed out I was a huge advocate at the time for just letting them go. Creative destruction.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Letting them go and let them reap what they've sown and let's see who comes out of the pile, you know, and what will come out of the pile will hopefully be a leaner, stronger, entity that is, you know, good for our economy, not just this remaining blighted, you know, huge or blighted, bloated, entity that's gonna do the same thing over again. But that didn't happen. And on the whole, the banks are still shitty and, but fortunately, they aren't doing a lot, you know, overtly, they aren't doing a lot of what they did before, but, you know, only time will tell whether or not we're going to get ourselves into another, you know, credit crisis.
I'm going to go ahead and predict yes.
So speaking of like the new realities, I think two new realities we need to potentially embrace is number one, if you think you're going to still be in the white collar industry, if you haven't figured it out by now, your 4-year degree is basically now your high school diploma. And your master's degree is really saying that you want to go somewhere and do something.
And even that increasingly is becoming less.
Yes, correct.
I mean, right now there's less valuable. Exactly. And I think there are people trying to find shortcuts. I think one of the diploma mill kind of creations is they're trying to, say, hey, if you come to us and tell us what your, you know, experience is, you know, especially if you're a guy that has been able to slide in and do multi-million-dollar projects, you probably have the knowledge of a master's degree in there, and we'll be able to put together a piece of paper that says you do have a master's degree and that sort of thing. And half the time it would take to get a master's degree.
Right. But I mean, look, I think employers are very cognizant of these diploma mills and they know. I mean, look, if you've got candidates, two separate candidates, one guy's got a, you know, Wharton Business School credential on his resume, and the other guy's got a, you know, university of whatever. I'm not even going to say what I want to say. I don't want to kill anyone that's, you know, that's been to any one of these schools, but like, you know, if, you know, you've gone to one of these diploma mills and they're looking at that as opposed to someone who's been to a top tier school, you know, it's not going to matter. They're going to take that person. And you know what? That person that goes to a top tier graduate school is probably never going to have a problem getting a job. What we're talking about is the lower to middling tier schools, colleges and university and graduate schools that really are going to have to fight for the jobs that are available. And, you know, again, like I said before, setting yourself apart with, you know, specific experience or certifications, something that, you know, delineates you from the pack is really the only way to have any kind of security.
Yeah, but that comes with school loans now. Lots of school loans now.
Hey, look, I took school $160,000 worth of school loans, you know, and it's cost of doing business these days.
Cam, you cited the bell curve earlier. So if we can just for a moment, all of us visualize your standard bell curve with the bulk of the population in the middle and the dullards on the left side and the, you know, the geniuses and the high performers on the right side, you know, down where the bell flattens out. Now overlay that with where the sort of distribution of success is now and is going to be. And I'm seeing things kind of, I'm not seeing a bell curve anymore. I'm seeing things definitely pretty flat until you get into the exceptional range.
Well, I think that all comes down to how you define exceptional. I mean, is exceptional intelligence or is exceptional, you know, business acumen? Is exceptional
exceptional is Wharton versus like Florida International University, right? I mean, let's be honest here, you know.
No, absolutely.
Or my alma mater, Florida Atlantic University. I'll be fair. I'm not gonna.
Well, it just like, you know, many years past, and even back to the, you know, Middle Ages, or you know, where whenever. I mean, look, the upper crust has a huge leg up on the lower crust, and but I still do think that, you know, we live in the land of opportunity, and you can have you can give yourself a leg up. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps, which is the, you know, the colloquial term, I guess, the standard analogy given. It's just going to take you a lot more work and a lot more effort. I mean, look, immigrants come to this country every single day and they make it. The world, our country is littered with examples of immigrants coming to this country, working 18-hour days, you know, buying a cab and then turning it into a fleet of cabs, or buying one small, you know, burger franchise or Subway or something and turning it into 150. You know, it's you're on the whole, I still believe that if you put in the time and the effort, you don't even need to be a genius to become a millionaire in this country. I think that the problem is a lot of second, third, fourth generation immigrants, or traditional quote unquote Americans have a sort of sense of entitlement that, and people are probably thinking I'm a big dick right now, but whatever, you know, I'm just trying to sort of tell it like I see it. You know, I think there is a sense of entitlement that, hey, somebody owes me something. You know, if I put my time in and I work my 9 to 5, then that company owes me something. And the reality of it is nobody owes you shit. You know, and if you're going to wait around, for a company or a politician or your parents or whatever to give you something, you know, you're going to learn a hard lesson, brother or sister. Like you have to be the captain of your own destiny.
Like a perfect example of that is I think a lot of people have a weird idea of what small business is and what small business really means. Most people think of small business as what I call the hobby businesses, somebody who is retired, they go to their small downtown, they open up an arts and crafts store that's only open 9 to 5 on the weekdays and closed on the weekends. Yeah. And really, small business is companies that make, or are companies, there's education in the air, folks, is companies that make $2, $3, $4, $5 million a year. And a lot of those are plumbers and electricians who've built the business up and started to subcontract out. Or I would like to know, whoever's running the subcontracting business for my cable company, for the installers, what are they making? And the franchisees, the guys who started up, you know, flipping the burgers, and then they eventually become part of that company that owns 4 or 5, you know, actual restaurants. And that's kind of the reality we're in now. It's not a franchisee has one store. A franchisee gets with other franchisees, and they create a company to own several stores to make that a multi-million dollar business.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, that's one track I want to get into also is, real quick, is I think we are underestimating vocational training these days. Mostly because I just had it happen to me, twice. I actually went and got my own vocational certification, and I'm doing okay after I changed a career. And then my son, he flunked community college twice. He would get A's and coding, and he'd get A's in statistics, and he would get an F in English and an F in philosophy. But we put him into a vocational setup, and he took accounting. I didn't even know you could take accounting as a vocational thing. I thought you could only, you know, basically fix cars and do plumbing if you were going to a vocational school. And he made A's all the way through. So hopefully here he'll get a certification, and then he'll start becoming a bookkeeper.
And, you know, traditionally, you know, unfortunately, people have sort of always looked down on the quote unquote vocational schools or trades or whatever.
I'll admit it.
But you know what? But you know what? The reality of it is, like you said, if you are a good plumber, and Warren Buffett is, who's a huge hero of mine. I mean, this is his basic stance on anything, is that if you're the best or one of the best at what you do, regardless of what you do, you're going to make a ton of money. Like, if you're the best fucking plumber out there, you're gonna make a shit ton of money. It doesn't matter that you're, you know, cleaning other people's shit. If you're the best, whatever, you know, bookkeeper, that doesn't mean you have to just go and work for someone and be a bookkeeper all day. You can start a bookkeeping subcontracting business that, you know, like, how do you think ADP started with, like, you know, payroll services and stuff like that? You have to think out of the box, and you have to think outside of the box and do something different. There's a book that I read called Click Millionaires, and it's all about home-based internet businesses and people that, and it's not like one of those, hey, you know, come to my free seminar, and, you know, it's an actual, just, it's just a book. They're not selling you anything but the actual book. And it's showing, it's gives you, it's littered with examples and littered with, strategies of how the market is totally different now. And you're not going to make money. Well, you can make a certain amount of money in the traditional STEM, lines of business, and fields, and in the traditional fields that make money. But the reality of it is even if you become a doctor, you're not guaranteed to live on Millionaire's Row anymore and be in the upper crust. There are a lot of doctors out there making under $100,000 a year, which would have been unheard of 10, 15, 20 years ago. And so those learned professions are having to figure out different ways to generate revenue. And there are a lot of doctors now that are opening up different lines of businesses. Like, you know, if you're a dermatologist now, the big thing is skincare products and concierge, you know, going to people's homes and doing Botox and all that kind of stuff, because you're not just going to get by treating kids with acne anymore. And so. It's, you know, I would encourage anyone out there that's going into college or even looking to change their line of business, you know, think outside of the box, think of how you can do something different than someone else, because that's where the money is going to lie.
And funny you should mention that, because I actually know of quite a few people now that, you know, back in the day, so to speak, they would have been doctors, and after doing their own little cost analysis, they decided not to. They're going to become nurse practitioners, or they are nurse practitioners now. And their whole mindset is, it's cheaper. I got into the workforce much faster than a doctor did. And all I had to do was just admit to myself that, you know what? Maybe I'm not going to be that doctor that makes a million dollars doing something, But, you know.
Well, and the reality of it is that Doctor isn't making a million, unless you're like,
exactly.
You know, unless you're opening up your own practice and building on that practice and, you know, opening up several locations and really killing it, you're not going to make that million, or you're like that sought after heart surgeon that everyone in the world has to have. And, you know, rich people are willing to pay, you know, tons of for your time. You're not going to make that money, and you're going to spend 8, 10, 12, 15 years just to make $100,000, $200,000 a year. That's not worth it, in my opinion.
Exactly. And I know places where you can get a license to be like something like a physical therapy assistant, and that doesn't stop you from actually hiring a physical therapist to do the stuff that needs to be done for your business and then run your own business.
Well, I mean, that's the other thing too, is that here in Florida, we have those minute clinics. You see them all over exactly. the place. Like, I guarantee you that most of those places are not even owned by doctors. They're owned by businessmen or, you know, entrepreneurial enterprising people that opened up a clinic, went and got one of these doctors that was making, you know, not making enough money and said, hey, I'll pay you X amount of dollars to do hours here and be my quote unquote medical director and oversee whatever happens. And, you know, they bring in a couple nurses and some staff and,
boom.
You know, but they're reaping the lion's share of the profits. It's crazy.
So for anyone out there taking notes, here's some ideas for some businesses.
Yeah. I mean, I happen to be in a profession where, you know, it's highly regulated. So, you know, it can't be outsourced, knock on wood, because, you know, you've got to be licensed in the particular laws of your state and stuff like that. And there is a specific rule that you cannot share fees with non-lawyers. So that would never happen. You couldn't have a law firm owned or run or own or run by a non-lawyer.
Hmm. This is all very curious to me. Go on.
And I wonder who made that law, right?
Yeah. You know, I can't help but notice just in what you said there, that certain barriers have been erected to protect some professions from appropriation by nefarious opportunistic businessmen.
Those who win are not always who, you know, are the smartest, but, you know, it's usually who makes the rules. I'm fortunate to be in that profession.
Cam, I think a case could be made for real damage done to society through unqualified technical professionals getting their hands on our national technical infrastructure. And
Guess who would need to file that case?
Well, listen. I think certain lawyers, if they could argue these cases successfully, would stand to profit handsomely from erecting sure. layers of protection around the technology industry.
That's true too. I bet that would work. But you know, it comes back to what I was saying before, and if you've never read any of Warren Buffett's books, I would certainly recommend that as well. I mean, the guy is, they don't call him the Sage of Omaha for nothing. I mean, the guy, even though he's what, in his 80s now, he still is as smart as a whip and sharp as a tack. I saw an interview with him the other day and, you know, he's still, even though the guy probably doesn't even like know how to turn on a computer. And I'm just saying that I don't know if he does or not. He's still so smart when it comes to the changing times. So I can't even take credit for a lot of the things I've said tonight. I mean, that's basically, you know, what I've got learned from him, and it is adaptability, man. You have to adapt with the changing times, and you have to be able to sort of take a long view of what has happened and what you think is going to happen, and, you know, make yourself as diversified and flexible as possible to change with the coming times, because no one knows really what's going to happen. And that's really the only way to survive in today's economy.
So Brian, there you have Cam's advice on education, and Chris definitely coming down in favor of recognizing that a vocational path is perhaps a better way to go than lengthy and expensive formal education. What are your thoughts? And I'll maybe let you have the final thoughts before we adjourn.
Well, I think it's kind of interesting how the answer is still more education.
Yeah.
It's just not necessarily in the field you want to go into.
Yeah. It's
or in the classic sense,
right.
of, you know, academia or whatever.
It's acquisition of marketable skills and knowledge, I guess, basically.
Or marketing skills and knowledge.
And it doesn't help if your profession is the one responsible for writing the laws.
Sounds like it helps quite a lot.
Yes. Well, go ahead, Thomas.
To recap, a lawyer cannot share profits with a non... How was that again?
Well, yeah, you cannot share, like, you know, if I wanted to open up a law firm with you, Tom, the bar would not, that would be a bar.
The bar is your union, right? I mean, let's be honest. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Well, no, the bar, you know, is the regulatory body that would strip me of my license if I didn't.
Uh-huh.
So they're sort of the overseer, but
they're also the ones who kind of keep your wages pretty high and,
well, yeah, I mean, they're going to do what's best for themselves as well.
So they're
your
union. Okay. Go on.
But
you pay them dues, correct? Yeah, so they're 100% a union. Go on.
Right. And the thing is that there is a good reason for that, though.
Yeah, sure.
It does protect the public trust and it does protect the clients, because once you monetize and commoditize legal services and make it a business in the sense of maximizing profits, it does do a disservice to the consumer. And so, and the consumer is a client. And so the client's trust and the client's best interest is always paramount. And that's one thing I will give the bar. They are very much in tune with making sure that that is the case. That's why you see a lot of these lawyers getting disbarred every year, because they have, you know, done something that has, you know, violated the client's trust and violated the client's best interest. And so that law is, I'm not going to say it's 100% to look out for the client, but I would say it's probably at least 80%, because they want to make sure that any lawyer that is a part of a law firm has skin in the game. It's not just some businessman that came in and said, hey, we're going to, you know, we're going to make this a business and provide these services. You know, your license is on the line with every client that you admit to your, you know, that you accept to your law firm.
I don't mind so much for lawyers, this protection. How did we not do that for politics?
It should be. I mean, I think it should be for doctors too. I mean, to be honest with you.
Well, the doctors have the Hippocratic Oath, but from what I'm hearing is basically the bar's secret motto is, don't kill the golden goose.
Well,
if you screw over the client, guys, we won't have a business.
Well, yeah, I mean, like in general, obviously, you don't want the bad apples to spoil the bunch,
exactly.
You know. So that's the bar is very active and very, very on point in terms of making sure that they, you know, go after these bad eggs. And they're very harsh on the penalties for. You know, even minor things can have very far-reaching effects on a lawyer's business. I mean, even if you did something minor and, say, got a suspension for 6 months or 3 months or 2 months or even a month, you basically have to get rid of all of your clients. And unless you're like a big firm or a firm where other lawyers can sort of take your clients on for that 30 days or 90 days or whatever it is that you're suspended. If you're a solo guy or a girl and you get suspended, you basically have to discharge all of your clients and lose basically all of your customers until you're reinstated and then start all over again. So it is a huge deterrent, and you know, I think the bar does a good job in making sure that the client trust is protected. I mean, you wouldn't. Tell that to, you know, clients of Scott Rothstein.
right.
And they probably will have like a different take on it. But, you know, there's always going
to
be bad.
Well, I'm pretty sure at some point, either prior to or during or after his incarceration, he was disbarred. So, you know.
Oh, certainly. He was disbarred very, very quickly. Yeah.
Okay, right. So it goes to show even the most ethically, stringent professions are open to some shenanigans, let's say.
Oh, and for, yeah, I mean, there, you know, there's bad doctors, there's bad lawyers, there's bad engineers. I mean, there's bad, you know, there's always, you know, people are human, and there's always going to be bad humans. So regardless, you know, of what profession they get into.
Too true. So Brian, You're basically on board with this. The one takeaway I'm getting is that like existing seems increasingly more exhausting as we move forward.
Well, like Cam said in the beginning, you get out what you put in. If it's, you know, too tiring or whatever, you don't have to do that.
Oh, just sit back and let the state carry you?
No, not necessarily the state carry you, but there's a lot of gray area there. You know, you can just get a 9-to-5, put in a 9-to-5, and collect the 9-to-5 pay.
Just have lowered expectations of your lifestyle.
Right. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, you know, have a nice hobby, date realistically, maybe only have one kid instead of seven.
Right.
You know,
I love your take on things, Brian. You're absolutely right. 100% right.
All right. I don't know. I'm not, I guess at a certain point, I'm not really sure what the point of a society is.
Well, you know, and Tom, I think it was, where were we? We're at like Moe's or something where we had this conversation about like, that brings up a whole nother can of worms. That is like another show, or maybe not even a show, because I don't know how far we want to get into politics, but you know, I think the statistic is 50% of the population is unemployed right now.
Oh my God.
And of course that includes, you know, retirees, children, all that stuff. But a big chunk of that are people that just sort of get by on the state. And it's someone listening to this podcast, hearing me saying, rah, rah, go out and, you know, take a risk and start your own business and, you know, be the best and work hard. You know, they might, it's very realistic for them to be thinking, well, why the hell should I do that if, you know, my neighbor is just sitting at home on his ass doing nothing, collecting welfare or collecting unemployment checks or collecting assistance from the state. And he's living just the same as I am, you know, maybe even better. And I'm out there busting my ass and taking a chance to pay taxes at 30%, 40% or whatever it is to fund this person's lifestyle.
I think that goes back to what makes you happy, though.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I don't think I would be happy doing that.
It does not please me to know that some portion of my tax dollars are going to pay for lazy people to do nothing. But I don't think that's, I think what they call the free rider problem. And you never escape that in any endeavor meant to basically benefit the public at large. You're going to have a few people that take advantage.
Yeah,
very true. But you can, like you said, a few people.
Well, yeah.
I don't think it's a few people. I think the free rider problem has gotten way out of.
Okay, so are you, hey. If the state system of welfare and benefits were a subway system, the turnstile would just be getting jumped over constantly. Is that what you're trying to say?
Absolutely.
That's sad.
But, you know, again, like that's politics, you know, politics, religion. We probably want to stay away from this.
Well, nerd extravaganza, with the,
we know no bounds.
Yeah. Actually, our new show, Nerd Extravaganza with the Gloves Off, will be discussing these things on a regular basis. So tune in.
Hard hitting stories
that hit you right where your politics lie. I don't know. We'll come up with with a catchier punchline than that.
Yeah.
But I think we painted a pretty bleak and hopeless outlook for the mediocre.
Our job is done.
Yes.
Be born rich. That's the takeaway.
Be born rich. And, you know, I hate to say it, but, you know, we pulled ourselves up by our bootstraps. What percentage of the population can boast a podcast where we're about to crest 160 episodes? Let's be honest. I mean,
I know, man. I mean, we were able to buy a microphone and a computer.
We have justified the expenditure of literally hundreds of dollars.
As a tax write-off. No.
Not even. I don't even think there's any. I have no justifiable reason to list this on my taxes. But hey, it's been fun. And that maybe that's a moral. You may want to follow your dreams, but see about paying your bills first and follow your dreams in some other way, by podcasting or what have you.
Yeah, just come on here and bitch about what sucks about your life, and maybe someone will listen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And perfect segue, Cam. Does anybody have anything else?
Maybe I'm crazy, but didn't Casey Kasem used to say, like, reach for the stars, but keep your feet on the ground?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, I believe he did, yeah. I think it was I don't even remember. I don't want to butcher
it. Reach for the stars. I remember what his voice sounds like, unfortunately.
Reach for the stars and unionize. All right. If you guys have nothing else, I think we can probably let our listeners get back to work.
I'll get off my soapbox.
To quote our illustrious governor, let's get back to work.
Who says they're not listening while they're at work?
Don't! Better not be. That's stealing. That's actually stealing from the company.
Yes. You're picking the corporate pocket.
I'm not paying you to have fun.
Oh, man.
All right. Well, listeners, with all that said, we won't ask you to pick any corporate pockets, but we will accept you. But we will ask you to pick our podcast on a weekly basis by subscribing to us on whatever software you happen to use for your podcast listening, rating us favorably, etc. And if you like, checking us out on Stitcher.
Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, add us to your Google circle, and join the Nerdstravaganza HQ group on Facebook.
On your coffee break, head on over to nerdstravaganza.com and check out this and all of our back episodes. Head on over to a big, faceless, nameless, terrible corporate proletariat called YouTube and check out all of our special videos and video content. And don't forget to shoot us an email at nerdstravaganza@gmail.com and tell us all of your hopes and dreams, or bitch at us for being corporate shill jackasses. whatever you want to do.
And with all that out of the way, take us away, Chris.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to have you come in on Saturday. That would be great. We're behind on the TPS reports.
That's pretty good. That's almost as good as awesome. Corporate proletariat. That was wonderful.
Yeah. I was like, corporate what?